When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
In New York, we're starting to get a little bit chilly. So a lot coming up on the podcast this week. Main part of it is a member of the band with the biggest radio hit in the country, Eric. We're going to find out exactly how his last name is pronounced, but it's Eric of Portugal the Man, guitarist, talking about how a song with a retro 60s sound, Feel It Still, has become the biggest rock crossover hit in 5 years and one of a handful of songs in the last decade and a half to top six airplay charts. Really just a huge crossover hit. So we're going to get the inside story from Eric of Portugal the Man about that. Also, if you don't know his own backstory, it's pretty inspirational. So we're going to talk to Eric coming up here on the podcast, last week's podcast. Trevor, you pretty much ran that one. It was our rap roundtable.
I mean, did I run it? Or I feel like
I was there.
I was
there.
A supporting player as well. But yeah, we had three great guests on last week. Low-key from Beats One, Niall Ivey, as he kind of went by as well. Mikey Fresh out here from Vibe, and Marjua Estevez of Billboard Latin. So three people up in here. We were talking about a lot of the topics we kind of touched on over the course of the year in different segments and with different guests, but just focusing on really the state of rap music, what it looks like going forward, and in particular how rap music and sort of pop radio are a little bit of an odds and some reasons behind that and what they can do going forward. So hopefully if you guys listened to it last week, hopefully you enjoyed it. Got a few comments, I think, from some people who really enjoyed the format, really enjoyed the guests. If you haven't checked it out, luckily, it is still on the internet, so just make sure you go and find that and let us know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I kind of sat back just because I'm not any kind of a rap expert. We had three people and you who are so knowledgeable about it. But at one point, listening back to it afterwards, I really agreed with what Low-Key said about radio. Radio is kind of my specialty of how, I think sometimes we in the industry or even in New York, people who have a subway commute and aren't driving, kind of think that radio maybe isn't on the level that it was. And you know, we're more into playlists and Spotify and things like that. But it's still so go-to for people who drive, who don't have time to fuss with playlists. So I just think that was a good perspective that he brought to that.
Part of that also is
he works for Beats One.
Well, he does work for Beats One, but it's also kind of a youth bias because we always look at, you know, things. We always look from the perspective of, you know, kids and what's coming up and what's hot and what's on the apps and what's trending. And I mean, and obviously while all that's important, you know, you can't have an industry without looking at the future. But I mean, you forget that, yes, 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds and older, you know, they also like to enjoy music too. And
we still
radio is the way that they came up. So it's hard for them to abandon it.
You know, who knows what's going to happen going forward? I could totally see AM radio not being anything full mainstream some years from now. Maybe that becomes more a brokered programming or a religious program, something much more niche than it is, because the sound quality just isn't, you know, for someone who grows up now with sound quality of whatever they want on streaming services and elsewhere, I can't expect a young person to listen to the hiss of AM. So I could see that going away at some point.
Kind of to that point, I also think I'll be interested to see, and I think cars are going to play a key role in that, because
right.
Kind of like you were saying, I mean, I think for people, Now you're saying in the morning you don't have time to be fussing with playlists and all this and all that. And for a different segment of the population, you know, playlists are automatic in a way. People have their playlists for whatever mood or whatever moment. And I know, you know, nowadays there are obviously a lot more cars that are getting smarter and smarter. And like my parents have cars, you know, now where you turn it on and the Bluetooth syncs with your phone and your phone just starts playing.
Right.
So it's not even like you – so it's not even that you have to press any buttons to get to your phone or change it out. So I wonder if those kind of, you know, as I guess this generation grows up and gets cars and newer and better and more integrated cars like that, I mean, that could also be a thing that – you know, pushes it out the door a little faster.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's probably going to be like how network TV used to rule everything on TV. Now it's a piece of the pie. So I think that's probably where radio is going to be entertainment-wise.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I know somebody made the point last week. We kind of went back and forth a little bit about it, if radio would sort of be extinct. And, you know, I feel like it's kind of one of those things people are saying, well, it'll be like the CD or it'll be like the, you know, an 8-track or it'll be like a mixtape. Not a mixtape, a cassette tape. And it's like, well, that's the form, you know, the form of song has changed. But the medium, like in terms of a whole distribution channel,
right,
is something I don't think we've really ever seen kind of go away. So it'd be surprising if radio were to just vanish, you know. I mean, just like a giant ecosystem that would just go away. I mean, there's no way it could just vanish, I don't think. But
right, 15, 20 years from now in the podcast, we'll come back to it.
Well, the Chart Beat celebrates its 35th anniversary with the.
All right. Flashing back, what are we flashing back to later on?
This week we'll be flashing back to not one particular year. We'll kind of hop around certain songs in a performer's career, all of which we're peaking on the Hot 100 this exact week. So it's a big week in this person's career. This date, mid-November, seems to be pretty hot. Not going to give the name away just yet, but no, she was one of the strongest voices of the 1970s into the 1980s. And though she's no longer with us, there is a musical in her honor. So we will talk about her and her legacy coming up.
And I mentioned it was getting chilly, so maybe that's sort of a reverse clue.
That could, yeah, something, yeah, weather plays a part in it for sure.
All right, let's listen to this week's Top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Count the list, I love you. Baby, we don't stand a chance. It's sad, but it's true. I'm way too good at goodbye.
Number 7.
Spread the rest on new chain. My bitch love do cocaine. Ooh, I fuck a bitch, I forgot name. I can't bob me no wetter rain. Rather go and bob on.
Number 6.
I'm a rebel just for kicks. Let me kick it like it's 1986.
Number 5.
Lightning and the thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder, feel the thunder.
Number 4.
It's the lightness in the air when you're there chest to chest with the lover. It's holding on though the road's long. Seeing light in the darkest things. And when you stare at your reflection, finding hope and hope it is.
Number 3.
So don't get comfortable. I don't dance now, I make money move. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now and speak, that means
Number 2.
My heart is in Havana, oh na na. He took me back to East Atlanta, na na na. Oh, my heart is in Havana, my heart is in Havana.
And Number 1.
Fucking hoes and popping pillies, man, I feel just like a rock star.
That's my exit music for the top 10.
Was that beatboxing?
No, no, not even going to insult anybody by saying that was my wannabe beatboxing. And while I cannot beatbox, I will at least tell you guys that what you just heard was the top 10. And for a fourth week in a row, you heard it. Post Malone and 21 Savage Rockstar holding strong at number one. But if you've been paying attention to the countdown for a couple of weeks, and I think this is one thing personally that I kind of like, you know, it had been a little stagnant in the top tier for a little bit up there.
Right.
So, but we're hearing right behind Post Malone, number two this week, Camila Cabello, Havana featuring Young Thug. So song's making a huge jump up. It was number seven last week. So a 5-spot gain, first time in the top five. And of course, it must be said, something I'm sure all the fans have been watching for since Camila left Fifth Harmony last year was kind of who's gonna win, who's gonna get the better settlement out of the divorce. So far, it seems like Camila is doing great. Number two is the highest that she has ever been in her entire life on the Hot 100. That includes her time with Fifth Harmony. I'm sure Fifth Harmony fans will know that the group got to number four last year with Work From Home, the Ty Dolla $ign. Camila actually got to number four in her solo career with her duet with Machine Gun Kelly, Bad Things, earlier this year. And now with Havana has taken number two. And, you know, of course, the question really, I'm sure on plenty of people's minds, is going to be, can she be the first one to get that number one?
Right. You know, it's sort of, it's interesting that you know, the two pop groups that feel like they've gotten the most social buzz the last few years are the girl band and the boy band, Fifth Harmony and One Direction. And now soloists for both of those acts have had bigger hits solo than with the group. So Fifth Harmony has gotten to number four. Camila's now had a number two hit. One Direction has peaked as high as number two, but Zayn got a number one hit. So as big as they were, and maybe still are overall in terms of pop culture as groups, soloists have actually done better. You know, we've actually seen that before historically. If you go back to one of your favorites, Trevor Bobby Brown and New Edition, he had a number one hit. They never did as a group. For me, 80s pop, Belinda Carlisle, after the Go-Go's. They split, they've gotten back together, but she had a number one with Heaven Is Place on Earth, and the Go-Go's got to number two with We Got the Beat. So sometimes you know, it's a matter of the group sets up the success of the solo person. They kind of do all the heavy lifting so that when the solo person comes out, everyone's kind of waiting, ooh, what are they going to sound like now, solo? And that there's just kind of that built-in anticipation. Yeah, the music still has to be good, but plays into it.
You know, it certainly does. I think that's an excellent point. I think we've seen a lot of times, you know, especially in this day and age where everything can be kind of teased up and geared out, you know it's coming. I mean, even going back to when Destiny's Child broke up and we were all kind of waiting for especially the Beyoncé record. But that's why that makes this Camila case more interesting for me is that, you know, this is not Camila's first solo single. She'd been, I mean, just in her terms of her solo career, had come out last May with Crying in the Club and as her introduction to her new era.
So it gets to number two this week. It's up 29% in overall activity. Rockstar is down by 8%. So it really closes the gap. Post Malone still has a pretty good lead at number one. It's not one of the closer races we've necessarily seen in recent weeks. And also the video pushes it up, the video premiere. This is the reaction to that. So you know, maybe next week we even see Havana fall back a little bit. Or the momentum is still building at radio. It seems like it's going to be an established hit at this point going forward. So maybe it dips but stays still pretty high on the chart. And Bodak Yellow and Logic are down at 3 and 4 after their peaks. So maybe it's kind of in a good spot right now, timing-wise.
Well, one of the interesting things, too, that will be kind of fun to watch is two songs that are both building at radio. I think they're pretty close to each other on the radio songs chart, if I'm not mistaken.
Rockstar and Havana. Right.
Yeah. So it'll be kind of interesting to see, you know, who can. It seems like the winner can really come from who gets biggest on radio first. And so it'll be interesting to see who. Am I wrong?
No, there's just that other not so minor matter of if Post Malone puts out an official video for Rockstar, that kind of changes the whole equation.
That's true. I mean, now we're recording this on Tuesday. So this tracking week, the next week at least, is already more than halfway over. So, I mean, the timing of that video will be obviously critical whenever it comes out, but you know, I mean, if depending on how much momentum the video has, I mean, radio still, there feels like there's more weeks to build for both of these songs, so it'll be interesting to see if the fact that Havana is more of a traditional pop song, you know, kind of helps it get to a higher spot on radio, or you know, is it, I mean, I guess this is one of the big, almost like one of the big showdowns of you know, this whole year in general. Is Post Malone streaming going to be big enough to keep off what you would think would be Camila's bigger radio presence?
Right.
So we'll see, I guess, who wins that duel. It's just like the whole year has come down to this moment, you know? I mean, to be fair, Post Malone already has 4 weeks, so I guess that's kind of nice.
So last week, before we got into all things rap, I made sure to mention and play Kenny G. The reason we brought that up is because before Havana, there was one other song called Havana in the Hot 100's history. It was by Kenny G. It was instrumental. In 1997, it dug a little bit deeper, and one of my favorite stats about this is that it debuted on the Hot 100 dated March 8th, 1997. Camila was born 5 days earlier. So I feel like there's been this whole connection between Camila and she was born in Havana, but
maybe she heard the song as a child. It just snuck its way into her brain, just was dormant all these years. And in the studio one day there it was.
Well,
Havana.
Well, I started thinking how the hook we played last week for Kenny G's Havana, if you sing the chorus to Camila's Havana over it, it could kind of work.
Now, what people don't know is that Gary's going to sing the chorus of Havana over Kenny G's Havana.
What Trevor doesn't know is that that's never going to happen and that no one would ever want to hear that. But
the first thing, it could happen. The second thing, yes, no one would want to hear it.
Yeah,
sure.
All right. I'll agree with that. So when I was there in radio, I used to do some of these I guess before people even called them mashups. I once made a mix of Leanne Rimes and Trisha Yearwood, both singing "How Do I Live."
Gary, were you the "You Don't Bring Me Flowers Anymore" guy too?
No, but I worked with the guy who did that.
That's where Gary learned all his talents.
Yeah, maybe it's in the blood. But so I got a little creative, production wise, on my laptop. This is not anywhere near super perfect quality. But what would it sound like if there was a mashup between Kenny G, Camila Cabello's "Havana"? Should we give a listen?
Gary Metro Boomin, let's go.
Go easy on me.
My fans, you know, I want to feed them. Like, I want to give them music. You're going to hear. I feel like in all of my music, it's always going to reflect. What I've been through. Havana,
gentle.
Y'all ain't know Gary was Timbaland in here, did you? Y'all ain't know Gary had that L.A. Reid babyface touch to him, did you? Y'all didn't know Quincy Jones and Gary go way back to middle school. Amazing. Amazing. I mean, we got a David Foster over here, for real. The only thing I will say, I feel like the tempo should have been a little slower on the Kenny G song.
I kind of tried playing with that and speeding her up, and I couldn't get it to sound
better. Also, I love how like it sounds like Quavo or like whoever is DJ Mustarding, like the hey in the
yeah,
back.
That wound up being the best part of it. I think.
I'm like, hey, it made like you made it too. You get the royalty check too.
You know, if there's someone out there who is way much better than this, the idea out there could be a thing.
I feel like there's got to be somebody who hears this podcast who can play with some of the Sonic, you know, virtual DJ kind of equipment or whatnot, right. Or Ableton if you got the big money. Send us your best Havana mashup.
That's like a demo. It's a demo. That's all it is.
Exactly.
Mashup demo.
Gary gets the royalty check still, you know?
All right.
But somebody, you can get the artist credit.
Somebody make it sound good. So the other thing that happened this week regarding the song. So one of the stats we put out there is that Havana is the highest charting song on the Hot 100, number 2 this week, with the name of a city in its title since 2006, London Bridge by Fergie. So Billboard tweeted this. And so, of all people, John Mayer tweeted back at Billboard saying, what did he say exactly?
He said, this is a riveting stat.
I feel like I heard it in my head the way you just said it.
I mean, I'm sure it feels like John Mayer said it. It's like, this is a riveting stat. Like, just, wow, Billboard. This is high, this is A-plus journalism right here. Like, woo, yeah, buddy.
You're not helping here. You're confirming my suspicions that there's a lot of snark there.
I mean, I don't know John Mayer personally. I mean, how great if it was like sincere, like, wow, like you guys, this is, this is great. This is riveting. This is riveting stuff. I feel like because there was no punctuation in particular, you got to read it. It's just, and it's John Mayer. John Mayer, he didn't mean it in like a malicious way, but I'm sure he meant it. It's kind of like the way we all kind of use Twitter, it's just to be jerks.
Well, you know what? Just in case he felt left out, that's the way I'm going to interpret it. Give a listen to this song. 'Cause I wonder sometimes about the outcome of a still verdictless life. A little piece of Why Georgia by John Mayer. In case he wants a stat, like we were just mentioning, of his own, it's the only top 10 on our adult pop songs chart ever to mention Georgia in his title.
Huh?
All right. He's paying attention to the charts. That's a good thing.
Dear John. Look, for the record, I love John Mayer. Great guitarist. Especially live. Beautiful. He's good. The man is talented. And Gravity, Gravity's such a good song.
So one of the other big moves in the top 10 this week, into the top 10, 14-7 for Lil Pump and Gucci Gang. And we're talking about our rap roundtable last week. A lot of the newcomers in rap, we were saying, kind of have a down-tempo sound. This song's kind of different. This is much more up-tempo.
Yeah, it does have more, a little more hype to it, a little more hype in the background. And I think part of that, it gets away with that in a good way because it's so short that it can, you can kind of compact a lot of energy into just this little 2-minute kind of out of nowhere tune. And I mean, with a title like Gucci Gang, Gucci designer brand, there's always been that connection with hip hop that you got to flex, flaunt, hype it up, especially on a song like that. So good to see him going through. And, again, it's one of those things that we mentioned last week as well. I hate to keep going back to last week, but I'm telling you, if you missed it, check it out. But it feels like, I mean, not to insult any of these new guys that are coming out, but it really feels like there's like a flavor of the month. Like everywhere you turn, it's like and I mean, to almost be like Oprah, and you have a top 10 and you have a top 10 and you have and everybody. It's like just the new breakout crew of this is right. Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, great to see because I think it's something that has been there underneath for a while. And now, just now the climate and the culture is right for them to make it. But I mean, this guy, especially me, 17, born in 2000. So
right.
Already the next decade, of people are starting to come through. And so it's just like, whoa, this is something to see for sure.
The other song debuting just outside of the top 10 is Motorsport by Migos, Nicki Minaj and Cardi B. Top 10 debut in streaming obviously puts Nicki Minaj and Cardi B together on a song. The longtime queen of rap with newcomer Cardi B. So there's all that. But one of the more interesting things to me is the people who are name checked in the song. There's a whole ton of people. One of them, the one that hit me, Boston sports fan, Bill Belichick, gets mentioned in the lyrics to this song. Bill Belichick has a hit on the Hot 100.
Is that what that means? I mean, in that case, Shakespeare's got one, Orville Redenbacher's got one, Marilyn Monroe's got one, Anna Nicole Smith has got one.
Any other NFL current coaches you can name?
Any current NFL?
The show is that the Patriots, they can just win at everything.
But how? I'm sure, I'm sure Sean Payton's got to be. Lil Wayne, don't let me down.
You go listen.
He, you know, Lil Wayne is all New Orleans. He's got to be up there.
Britney Spears is also mentioned. Jackie Chan.
Oh, so Britney Spears has a Hot 100 hit now, too. Oh, my God, Britney. She's had,
she hasn't won a Super Bowl. She hasn't won 5 Super Bowls. Jackie Chan, Ricky and Lucy are mentioned. Just a whole bunch of random people mentioned in the song. But Bill Belichick, that's the one that I'm shouting out. All right, so that's this week's Hot 100. Also back at number 6, we heard Feel It Still by Portugal the Man. So Eric of Portugal the Man, the guitarist, we wanted to find out how this band feels about having this, to quote the lyrics, out of left field, kind of a hit, where they've had alternative success before, but people in the mainstream kind of didn't know who this band was until just a few months ago when the song really started blowing up. Now it's become a number one pop hit. It's been number one on 6 different airplay charts. And as we said, that's incredibly rare. 12 songs have done that in the last decade and a half. So this is really one of the biggest crossover hits in the 2000s. So we want to get the whole deal from Portugal the Man, what they think about that. So Eric is our industry insider guest this week. And again, we're going to get to Eric's personal story as well, which is pretty unique for a rock star. And the way he handles it is pretty inspiring. So Eric from Portugal the Man is our guest on the Billboard Jappy podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I keep my hands on myself.
Eric, all right, so we think it's either Hauk or Hawk, because it's spelled H-O-W-K. You tell us, Eric, you're here, you tell us.
It's the name of pop star, isn't it? It's Hawk, like H-A-W-K, but it's spelled H-O-W-K because I don't really know why. I think my great-grandfather had a weird sense of humor. But yeah, it's very Swedish and it's very phonetically inaccurate.
It's not an Alaskan pronunciation. It has nothing to do with that.
It might be. It might have been bastardized along the way over the course of a couple of generations. But I'm pretty sure it's just a Swedish mix-up.
All right, we've given you some work to do, apparently, after the podcast. A little genealogy work.
Change the spelling of your name, step one.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I mean, really, how crazy is everything right now with Feel It Still? I know you've been in the band for, you know, a couple of years. You weren't there at the start in 2004 when the band started, although you grew up with a couple of the guys. But does it just feel like, are you doing interviews nonstop? Does it kind of feel like every day is just a little more hectic than it's ever been?
The perspective is pretty hard to come by. I've been in the orbit of the band for a few years. I definitely picked a pretty cool time to step in as a full-time member. I would love to, you know, kind of take credit and be like, yeah, it's like Fleetwood Mac's cranking out record after record, and then all of a sudden they bring in Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, and bam, number one. But yeah, I've been watching these guys, you know, bust their ass off for 12 years before I stepped in, and it's hectic. It's basically, you know, the job hasn't changed that much from when I joined before Woodstock, before Feel It Still. You know, it's still play the show and drive overnight and do a few interviews and set up in the next town and play a show and drive overnight and do a few interviews. And, you know, it's still the same thing, except the interviews are more pleasant, want you to be there, and the shows are getting bigger, but it's not like a sudden, like, oh my God moment. You kind of need things to give you perspective, like old babysitters or, like, you know, old relatives hunting you down and being like, I heard you in Costco or in Walmart, you know, you're like, that's really weird. You know, having, you know, family friends point out, you know, that you're getting played at sporting events and stuff. That's pretty random.
Right.
It's pretty crazy.
Are you hearing the song on the radio? Is that a weird, artists always say it's kind of a surreal moment when they hear their songs on the radio.
Hearing the song on pop radio is real weird. I mean, that's the thing is, it's all that context. Like if I hear us in between Spoon and, like, I don't know, Kings of Leon or something, I'm like, cool, good alternative radio block. But it's when you're in between Chance the Rapper and Ariana Grande or, like, you know, Jay-Z and Demi Lovato. It's like, those are the weird ones. And those happen when, like, when you're in the Uber and you'll hear yourself on the alternative station and, then the driver will sort of fish around and look for a different station and he'll find the hip hop thing. And then there you are again. That's the really weird thing. It's, we have no business being there. We don't belong in that world. It's crazy.
And so obviously, you know, as the song grows and crosses over into pop, we're seeing it rise up the Hot 100. And are you guys keeping track of that week to week? We know it seems like you guys are. I know when it hit number one on the pop songs chart, some people in the office got some cakes from some management. So so how active are you guys at watching this every week? I, for the record, I didn't get a cake, but, you know, it's okay.
I didn't get a cake, man. I'm home. I'm on the first break that we've had in 2 months. I think the cool guy answer would be like, no, we don't pay attention to that stuff. You know, we're just happy that the song's doing well and we'll get to keep playing shows. But of course we're watching that. Just because it's so ridiculous. Like, again, watching it go up the alternative charts, like that's a world that, you know, we feel like we've been invited to in the past. And, you know, like that's still really cool. It's unprecedented. We never had a number one at alternative or any of these before, but that's not as insane as moving over to those pop charts. You know, three of the five of us are 36 years old and from a small town in Alaska. That's not really like the blueprint for a pop star. And we're watching our name, you know, climb above Justin Bieber and go above Taylor Swift. And we just had an epic one-on-one battle with Demi Lovato for the number one spot on the mainstream top 40. That's weird, man. We're goofy kind of like metal and punk kids from a small town in Alaska. It's bizarre. So, I mean, just as like a spectator from within the organization, I'm totally watching this stuff. Like, I watch it change, you know, by the day, and I get the text from the managers, and yeah, I'm running low on superlatives, but it's really fun to watch.
When you guys wrote the song, you can brag, you can be humble, you can be honest, but did you think this might be our breakthrough pop hit? Did it sound like, wow, this is really different, catchier, more potentially commercial than anything we've put out before? And did it hit you guys that, you know, this might be the one?
Yeah, we called it the worldwide smash hit before we released it. We kind of did the Babe Ruth thing of pointing out into the stands before you go and swing from. But that was, you know, that was hoping that it would kill it on alternative and kill it on, you know, the radio formats that we're used to operating in. Pop wasn't in the conversation at all. That was never, you know, even entertained. We're on Atlantic, and the pop team works Bruno Mars and Ed Sheeran. You know, that's and that they have the clean offices, and we're not invited into those. Like, we're not welcome in there. We're too dirty and weird and unpredictable to be invited into those places. But they took a chance on us this time. So you we are. It's crazy. Again, to answer your question, we thought and we hoped that it would do really well in the areas that we're accustomed to, like AAA radio and the alternatives, and like hopefully cropping over into some rock. But I mean, pop is just, it's a whole different world. I've done interviews on this run where I've tried to come up with comparisons, and for a while I was using Nirvana as someone that crossed over into the mainstream, and it's like Smells Like Teen Spirit as an example of going up into the charts and like, you know, making the mainstream weird. To get that perspective of, you know, that song was everywhere when I was, you know, at a very formative time, like starting my own bands and learning how to play music, that's just the biggest song in the world to me. And to think of it not doing what Feel It's Still Doing now, I can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah, we did the research, and the last 14 years, there have been two songs that have topped six different airplay charts. This song has been number one at rock, at alternative, at pop, at dance, at adult, top 40 at this point. And the only other song to have done that. All right, let's see.
Someone that I used to know. Is that one?
There are 12 songs that have been number one on at least six different charts, but only two of them came from alternative. We're number one in alternative. So it's Gautier's, Somebody That I Used to Know, and Feel It Still. So you're talking two songs in the last decade and a half that have had the crossover success from alternative, and you guys have one of them.
How do you wrap your head around that? We're all sort of like kind of, you know, swapping these texts back and forth, and we see articles and we see charts and we share it amongst ourselves. And, you know, there's always, you just run out of emojis after a certain point on the text chain. We're definitely at a point too, like nobody really knows who the band is. In addition to all these other number ones, we were number one at Shazam, which isn't necessarily a indicator of success. That basically means that people hear the song, they know the song, they have no idea who the hell you are.
Right.
And we stayed there for a long time. I mean,
but they're interested enough to know to figure it out. You know, let me figure out what I'm listening to at least.
I mean, I think that's a really cool stat, but it definitely shows that, you know, we're outsiders, and you know, even if we don't belong here, we're there.
You talk about people Shazamming the song or the band, and you know, I've read some people saying the song has become a hit partly because of its political nature, and I'm just kind of wondering how much of it really is that, because I kind of had to Google the lyrics myself. I'm just wondering, do people just hear the beat, do they hear the hook, or what are fans telling you about why they like the song?
I think it stands out. Like it's got like a weird 60s sort of spy movie thing.
Right.
It's not like a beat forward sort of singer singing at the top of the ability kind of thing. It's just smooth, and I think it sort of stands out. As far as the political thing, yeah, you gotta kind of dig for it. You gotta hear that song at least three or four times before you start thinking that there's something about, you know, political dissent or dissatisfaction there. I think on the surface, it's kind of one of those. It's sort of one of those like fight for your right to party kind of thing. Rebel Just for Kicks is totally, it's totally an analog with fight for your right to party. Like, get passionate and riled up about, you know, necessarily anything in particular. It's like the George Carlin thing of, you know, someone pointing out all the hypocrisies within the system, but at the same time, he's not going to vote. Like, it's sort of that same similar message. And I think that's something that if you're just hearing it on the radio or hearing the hook, you gotta hear it a few times before you're digging that deep into it.
I think it's kind of a case of both, where the song fits on pop radio because it has that big pop hook, and pop radio likes every once in a while when there's an alternative song that is so catchy that fits for pop, they'll take one. So I think, you know, this is that song that's so perfect for pop radio. It still stands out, but it's got those elements of a pop hit.
Well, I'll take that, and I think the beat and the tempo and in the melody, it's that, you know, Jarrell's Please Mr. Postman. It's a proven hook. It's a proven melody. But again, with pop radio, you've got pop stars, and you've got people singing like a pop star, which is, you know, in my head, that's sort of the Christina Aguilera and Adele sort of thing of like belting. And at no point does John belt in this song. It's just kind of smooth. And it's the same thing with the dynamics of the beat and that funky bass. Like, everything's just, like, level and pretty smooth. It's not, like, starting from a whisper, like, hello, and building up to this giant crescendo.
Right.
So I think programmers like it because it can fit between two songs like that as sort of a bridge, you know? Like, it's short enough. And I think, you know, because the dynamics start out pretty high and stay pretty high, you can mix it in with hip hop and stuff like that. I mean, these are all speculative answers. I really don't know why or how it's like so well at pop, but I'm willing to sort of think along out loud with you guys and try and figure it out.
You mentioned the hook coming from "Please, Mr. Postman." Same melody there. Motown fan of myself. How did that hook exactly come into play? And it seems kind of interesting that this old Motown classic, which I don't think many people, I mean, I guess a good number of people know the song, but it's obviously not like one of the major top hits of the Motown catalog. How did this come to be for you guys?
Well, people should know that song. I mean, the Marlette's version is great. I've got "With the Beatles" in my car stereo, and I don't think I've taken it out in 2 years. You know, it's such a good melody, and I know John, our singer, growing up, like, that was one of his favorite songs to sing along with the family on like family trips going in to get groceries in town. I think it's one of those melodies. It's fun. It's sort of almost like a bird call in a way, you know. In terms of like John's voice and my voice and everyone that has to sing backups in it, it's right at the top of the register. So singing it multiple times a day or going on radio stations and doing acoustic performances of it in the morning after, you know, a late night of playing a rock show and going out to the bars is really, really hard. but at the same time, it sort of keeps it fresh. And like, I think with the you know, interpolation stuff, like, obviously we gave the writers of "Please, Mr. Postman" a percentage of the song that they felt was fair. But it's one of those things where the legal team's like, you know, if you change two notes, you can have it, or if you change this or change that, you know, we've got like the musicologists on the phone, and they're explaining like things that we could change. And I mean, the melody was a placeholder while the song was being written, and we tried other stuff, and nope, it's not working. Like, that melody is so good that, like, you know, obviously we're going to pay for it and give credit where credit is due. And the hope there is that, you know, maybe someone finds out that that's a interpolation, or, you know, reads a comment on the YouTube page like, this reminds me of "Please, Mr. Postman," and then they look that up and they find a whole world of music that they didn't know about. Like, I think that's a cool way of keeping it going forward.
And was the chorus written first, Eric? How did the song actually, what do you remember about literally being born?
The bass line came first, and that was John, our lead singer, taking a lead singer break, just kind of wandering out of the studio while we're in the middle of working on something and finding a side room. And he basically was just hanging out with our friend Asa, who's the singer of Electric Guest, Asa DeCountain. And he's just a funny guy. He wrote and produced "Dick in a Box" for The Lonely Island. He's just kind of this goofy, like, theater kid who's got a great sense of humor. And they're talking, and John picks up like an old 60s Hofner bass and starts playing that little thumpy bass line. And Asa got really excited about it and recorded it. And, you know, he was like, "What do you got for words?" And the "Rebel Just for Kicks" thing had been sitting in the band's pocket, specifically in John's pocket, for years. And they had tried it in different things and it didn't work. So it was just kind of a serendipitous combination of the tempo being right, the feel on that bass line that he's just kind of mindlessly playing being right, and that placeholder melody just fitting right in. So honestly, the whole thing came together in less than an hour.
I feel like I sort of know the answer to this question, but I was wondering, now that you guys have had this first big pop hit, are you not hungry for more pop hits? Does this change your approach? It kind of sounds like you guys are just sort of, in some way, just sort of chuckling at the fact that we have a big hit, we do what we do, and if other people want to make this as big as it is, then that's on them.
Oh man, you just stole my answer. I mean, I'm smiling right now, just kind of thinking about that. It's totally like, we're sort of grinning, like, you know, the character in a Tarantino film that got away with it. We're going to keep doing what we do, but we all think this is awfully silly that you know, we're just tearing up the pop charts with this one, and there's no expectation. You know, we always try and write the best songs that we can, and you know, there's some thought to what you put out as a single, and I think that our next single that we're putting out is a song called "Live in the Moment." I think it could do very well in this world, but nobody's expecting it to. And I think, you know, I do think the game's changing a little bit. I think, you know, it's no surprise that suddenly it's not just one band that's, you know, doing the Billboard hot thing in the top 10. It's, you know, us and Imagine Dragons is in there. And I think genres are kind of being blurred a little bit. I also, like, I'm not fooling myself into thinking that Feel It Still is a rock song, or like a hard rock song in the traditional sense, in the same way that I don't think Believer by Imagine Dragons is a traditional rock song, and I don't think Hot Pots by Spoon is a traditional rock song, you know? And I think that's because rock, specifically like that brand of alternative rock, just kind of lost its way. Like, alternative got its name because it was too weird to fit in with anything else, but they gave it its own thing. But some, you know, years of labels wanting to go with a surefire thing, and alternative getting its own branch at majors, and it becoming its own, you know, massive radio thing. You got, you know, sort of two guitar, bass and drum, all-American singer, all-American frontman, songs about girls. It got into a corner, and then rock kind of did this interesting thing where rock and pop, I don't know, like, the lines are getting really blurred. It's happening in a really cool way.
Right. It kind of happened with 21 Pilots last year, where we're saying, you know, rock hits first over, and sort of is that rock? I agree. I think it's the same thing with you guys and Imagine Dragons. We just published a story today as we're taping this on how guitar sales are way down. Kids aren't buying guitars like they used to. Do you think it's people growing up with a generation where hip hop has been more dominant? I mean, at some point you figure there'll be some song that's really crunchy, and we've seen some of the pop punk, you know, Fall Out Boy, that kind of stuff, be hits in recent years, but it's been a while now.
I think that stuff can change so quick. I mean, there's at least there used to be a wiki page about this, but there's definitely some Scholastic articles about the Baker Street effect. It's when Jerry Rafferty's song off of Baker Street came out, with that enormous saxophone hook.
Right.
Sales of saxophones quadrupled that year. And I think that's, you know, that's because it was a fresh thing that no one had heard in a while, like this rock song with this soaring, you know, jazzmanic saxophone hook. I think, you know, rock got a little boring. But again, we're still a rock band live. And when we play these songs live, like, Feel It Still's got a really buried guitar in there. But when we play it live, it takes on more of like a Dick Dale or sort of a surf rock thing, and those guitars are clanging along. And you know, there's songs with huge guitar hooks on the record, like Rich Friends is all built around that guitar riff, and there's a huge solo on So Young on our record. I think you find your moments to stick them in there and you run with it. But I think just like the power chord thing, or like, you know, the big ringing open chords, like a Gin Blossom style band, like that's going to take a while to come back around. Nobody's clamoring for that sound to come back.
You just mentioned the Gin Blossoms.
Yeah, I did. I love the Gin Blossoms.
Yeah, I'm clamoring for that sound to come back.
Oh God. Till I hear it from you it's a heartbreaker. And it's a huge vocal hook, and those guitars sound perfect. But, I just don't think that sound has any place on alternative radio right now. It's like, you've heard it before, and you've heard it a lot before. And again, like, I think if you took Felix Still in a time machine back to the early 80s, like back to a fan of the Scorpions, and you're like, this is the number one rock song in the country right now, they would be so bummed out. But it's because, like, we've heard it before, and it's evolution and progress. And, like, if I can make my guitar sound like a horn line or like a sitar or something, like, I'm going to try and do that. Just because I think, A, like, the genre lines are blurred enough that you can get away with a little bit of experimentation. And B, like, we've heard all those power chords in every varying level of distortion before.
You talked about people Shazamming you guys and Googling and not really knowing so much about the band, but they know about the song. For people who don't know specifically your story, Eric, you had an accident 10 years ago, left you paraplegic, and you do a lot of outreach about that. I would think with the song becoming such a big hit now and you guys doing so many interviews and being out there more, you have a bigger voice now. So you're taking advantage of that. You've done a lot of PSAs. It's kind of a nice side story that you're able to use that bigger platform now for that cause.
I think that's a super cool thing. I think, it took me a while to sort of get comfortable with my own, visibility. Not necessarily in terms of, touring and all that kind of stuff. Just like, coming to grips with a new reality. And when I first got injured, this was like 10 years ago, I used to crop the chair out of all my photos and things and kind of had a hard time wrapping my head around it. And it wasn't until I started touring with whoever would have me or playing shows with the local bands around Seattle that I started to have conversations with other people that either had a brother or a sister or a parent, or even they themselves had a very visible physical disability, and that they thought it was a cool thing that I was up there. And I didn't even think about that. I was trying to keep touring for a purely selfish kind of motive. I'm too old to learn a new vocation at this point, but I'm pretty good at guitar and singing some backups, so I was just going to try and keep doing that as long as I could. But now it's sort of become like, the visibility is bigger, our sphere of influence is a lot bigger, and I do have people reaching out to me, and I do have people, in chairs or in mobility aids at shows coming up to me and thanking me. And that's probably the coolest thing about my job right now. So with all the PSAs and stuff, like I just did a whole series with March of Dimes Canada that no one here is going to see. And, it's not for press. It's not for promo. It's just using your voice and taking time. It's because I think it's a cool thing. It's not going to benefit the spread of the band at all or offer us any publicity, except for the fact that I'm talking about it with you right now. But it's a good thing to do. It's a cool thing to do. I just got mentioned in a Twitter story, someone saying, like, this is the first time I've ever seen myself in the media in regards to just having a chair and a picture on Billboard. And I think that's huge. I think that's really cool, especially among people my age or younger, is, just figuring out independence and to see that, I live this sort of ridiculous life of traveling around in a bus from city to city and, like living sort of a vagabond life. That's not something that I thought I'd be able to pull off, coming out of the hospital or coming fresh from an accident. And I think the culture in America used to be, it was the opposite of independence and visibility. It's like, either go into some long-term care or your family will take care of you or meet someone that can take care of you. You don't have to worry about it anymore. We'll make sure you're fine. I think like getting out and traveling and doing what you love and all that stuff is, the most kind of punk rock thing that you can do if you're hampered by some sort of, quote unquote disability. Just like find a way around it.
I watched one of the PSAs, Eric, where I thought it kind of had that kind of a punk edge, where at the end, the closing message was get back to work. You're talking to people with disabilities.
I didn't know if they were going to like that or not. I kind of riffed on that one. That was an ad lib. I said it, and then I turned stop. I pressed the stop button on the recorder, and I kind of chuckled to myself. I'm like, can I get away with that? is that cool? And I figured, like, yeah, that's totally cool. I mean, that is what it is. Like, every time that I go to the next show, it's getting back to work. You know, every day a tour is getting back to work. Just, you know, find a way and, like, yeah, do whatever it takes to do it.
I was reading, Eric, just that when your accident happened, you were in a different band. You said 4 months later you're going to be playing a gig. You didn't want to miss it. It feels like that just takes some kind of special resolve that's within you, and I'm not sure everyone would have that. It just seems pretty admirable that you have that drive.
I think it's just stubbornness. I don't know if it's a drive. Again, like, you know, I'd do whatever it takes to do this job. I've, you know, in the past, while I was in that band, and, you know, we were signed to a major and we were touring, but at the same time, when I was home, I was working in call centers and doing construction and, like, basically just killing myself with work to, you know, be able to go out and tour as much as I could. And it's kind of the same thing now. Like, you put in the work to figure out, you know, how your body's going to respond to a 45 or a 50 day tour and what you need to do and what you need to bring and what it's going to take to make that happen. But yeah, I mean, within about a year and a half of that previous band sort of, you know, calling it quits and me trying to figure out what I was going to do, I was just joining up with any band that would have me, any band that was, you know, doing sort of weekend warrior touring or, you know, little 4 or 5 day stints here and there just because I missed it so much. And a lot of that was driving in my own car behind a bus or behind a van or, you know, like taking public transportation to gigs or doing whatever I had to do. Just, you know, you do what you can to stay out there. And that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm still doing.
Well, I think going forward, probably for years, you're going to be in Uber and cab rides. And no matter how many times the driver changes the channel, you're going to be hearing, feel it still.
Man, there was one, we were staying in a hotel in Koreatown, which is like East Hollywood. And we had to make it to LAX, probably about a 11, maybe like a 10 mile drive, 30, 40 minutes tops. We heard it 3 times on 3 different stations on that drive. And it's just in the morning. The first time you hear it, you're like, yay, turn it up. Second time you hear it, you're like, that is hilarious. By the third time, you're just like, this is ridiculous. We're just punishing the airwaves right now. I sometimes worry that we're sort of Santana with Rob Thomas smoothing the country right now. Like, there was that moment, I think it was 1999, where it just, you couldn't escape that song. It was right on every commercial and every game of every sport.
If people dig in more into your catalog, which I'm sure people are doing now, they're probably liking the song and finding out other tracks. So, you know, another nice benefit is that you wind up all these other songs sort of become hits more in their own right, because people are finding out more about you guys. So it's one hit on its own, but it kind of brings out everything you've ever done before. And that's the nice thing about having such a huge pop hit. It just raises the whole profile. So it's good for everything you guys have ever done. It sort of takes years of music, makes it all a hit all at once.
I think it's rad, you know. And we have people coming out of the woodworks, you know, saying like, we sold out for pop, or like, you know, why would this rock band make a pop song? For people that don't know, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago, this band put out a record, and on the surface, I understand it looks pretty rocky. It looks pretty scary. It's called The Satanic Satanist, but every single song on there is 3.5 minutes or under, and it's some of the biggest pop hooks I've ever heard. And I mean, there's a song called When the War Ends that just has this enormous chorus. And, you know, I think we're all, like, growing up in Alaska, like, punk and metal were obviously the kings, and that's what you listened to with your friends when you were hanging out and skateboarding or, you know, setting things on fire. But we all had Oasis, you know, hiding somewhere in our trucks, and I love the Pixies, and, you know, my parents' record collection was dominated by, like, James Taylor and Joan Baez and, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and we're all pop kids at heart. We all love a melody. But yeah, there's a lot of back catalog in there, and I hope that people are digging deep into this band. of what they did before I showed up, and I'm even more proud of what they've been able to do since I've been around, obviously.
Well, Eric, congratulations on all the success. It's such a great story all around. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and giving us all the inside story about it.
We're into it. I mean, man, we definitely get a laugh out of some of this stuff. Just seeing our names up amongst these beautiful young people. Like, this is so ridiculous. But we're going to, we'll stick around as long as we'll have us. I am Tommy Boy. It's like, man, you guys could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves. That's kind of how we feel about selling, 36-year-old out-of-shape Alaskans to the pop charts.
Still glow, oh, yeah.
All right, so we didn't get any cake from Portugal the Man. We made that very clear, that we didn't get any cake, but cake celebration, it all fits for the hit that they're having.
Also great to hear from Eric, about how he's lending his voice in such a bigger way now, and because he has a bigger platform to all those kind of causes, especially the ones that obviously must be near and dear to him, given his own personal circumstance. So, I think it's always great when, no matter how big you are on top of the world or how much, how much fun the ride is, that people remember to lend back and give back to some people who may not be quite as fortunate.
And personally, musically, my favorite thing is he mentioned the Gin Blossoms, one of my favorite bands. So he has good taste.
Gary loves his gin. Also good taste.
What are we flashing back to, Jim?
All right, we are going to flash back to not a year, but an era, a whole era, Gary. That's gonna, it's a small but mighty day in the Canada music history. That is disco, and we are going to talk about its one and only queen, the legendary Donna Summer. Donna Summer, as everybody knows, really got her start in 1975 in terms of the American pop music scene. Love to Love You Baby, smash hit. We're going to fast forward a little bit and start our journey, though, in 1977. This week, in 1977, Donna Summer peaking at number 6 on the Hot 100 with the song I Feel Love, which, of course, if you're talking about Donna Summer, odds are you're talking about Giorgio Moroder as well, who was one of the producers on this song. And, Gary, you were saying right before we started on this, you say it's such a – I mean, like in a – not a, just you were very passionate in your – examination that it's a weird song.
It's very hypnotic. It's sort of dreamy. Or something like Last Dance or Bad Girls. They kind of hit you over the head with these hooks. I Feel Love. It's drawn out. It's a very unique sounding song.
Oh yeah, it definitely has. It's one of those songs you sort of get lost in. I guess like almost like for me, you listen to the song in like a club and it's kind of hazy. And I mean, it goes, it can go on as most of these songs in this era can, there are versions that go on for 10, 12, 14 minutes. This song, no exception, but hugely influential, even though Donna had been out before and Love, Love You Baby was a little more, I mean, it wasn't that same vein, but maybe a little more centered in, with a pop hook and some, obviously, the moans kind of anchoring it as well. This song definitely more experimental, and for that reason, really influential. This is one of the songs that maybe is not one of Donna Summer's best well-known biggest hits that people sing along to in that same way, but in terms of its development and disco and dance, people really point to this song probably as the most influential in her whole catalog.
Yeah, I think disco kind of had a formula. They were just pop songs kind of dressed up with disco beats. So this one, I think experimental is a good way to describe it.
It almost feels like a song that you really need to be like on drugs to fully appreciate.
It sounds like the 70s.
Truly, yeah, 100%. That's actually one, oddly enough, one of four Donna Summer songs that peaked on the Hot 100 this week. So this middle week of November was apparently, that was a hot time for Donna Summer. You know, you talk about I Feel Love, a year later, she's hitting new highs with another song. Her first number one on the Hot 100, that is a cover of Richard Harris's MacArthur Park. Fun fact about Richard Harris, I don't think most people know this. Richard Harris is actually also the guy who plays Dumbledore in the first two Harry Potter movies.
Right.
So if you didn't know Dumbledore had a secret past, he was a singer.
Did you like the original Dumbledore or the second Dumbledore?
It's we're getting so off topic here.
Well, you mentioned Richard Harris.
You're right.
This has to become the topic.
I know. It's one of those things where the first one, Richard Harris, before Michael Gambon took over, Richard Harris felt more like the dad,
right.
warm Dumbledore. I do wonder though, like how when Dumbledore has to get a little more active in the later books, you know, running around and casting. You know, it's hard to see Richard Harris doing that as much as Michael Gambon kind of does.
Yeah, like I
Richard Harris is more like guy on throne kind of right. Dumbledore rather than like badass wizard in the field.
Right, which was the actor's choice to make a little more of a hippie kind of a character. But yeah, I feel like somehow I'm drawn more to the original Dumbledore. It just sort of was a more warm and fuzzy kind of portrayal. But I think because the series got so dark by the end that it's kind of tough to imagine how that might have worked that way. So maybe it sad that we lost Richard Harris why the change happened. But it would be interesting to see how that might have translated to darker material later on.
Also, one last note on Harry Potter while we're over here. Apparently Ian McKellen was in talks to take over the role of Dumbledore. But apparently Ian McKellen was somewhat aware that Richard Harris was not fond of him when he was alive. And so he didn't want to take over that role and sort of do a disservice to his memory or you know, kind of bring that up. So it could have been Gandalf, Magneto, and Dumbledore. But hey, he was the bigger man and chose not to be.
All right, let's get totally off topic and go back to Donna Summer.
All right, yeah, what were we talking? Oh yeah, Donna Summer. Donna Summer, yes, she's number one for the first time this week in 1978 with her cover of MacArthur Park. You want to talk about a weird song? This is one of those songs where, you know, for decades, fans and critics and people have tried to kind of dissect what is this song about. There's you know, baking a cake and you let it out in the rain and it melted and MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark, and what in the world is this song? I really don't have any clue what this is about. Do you have any sense of what a number one hit MacArthur Park could be talking about?
There's a cover, sort of a cover, that I like of this song. Weird Al Yankovic did his version of it, 1993. I should tell you maybe why he did it then. It's called Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park is frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running wild. Someone shut the fence off in the rain. I admit it's kinda eerie, but this proves my chaos theory. And I don't think I'll be coming back again. Oh no!
Jurassic Park! I like it. MacArthur Park.
Totally.
Jurassic
works.
Park.
Right?
Jurassic.
I know what that one's about. I don't know what MacArthur Park's about. I know what Jurassic Park's about.
How to get back to Donna Summer at this point. We just dive right into it, I guess. So, yes, the year that MacArthur Park really starts for her is probably the biggest year of her whole career. Soon after that, she'll have the Bad Girls album, which comes out, which, if you know any songs by Donna Summer, you probably know the two number one hits off that album, which are Hot Stuff and Bad Girls. So both of those number one hits as well. After those two songs come out, there's another hit right there.
Dim all the lights, sweet darling, 'cause tonight it's all the way.
number two hit this week in 1979, "Dim All the Lights," which Donna actually wrote herself. She had been involved in a lot of songwriting, but this was the first time she, I believe, wrote one of her hits all by herself. Same kind of disco feel that it really. It's one of those songs that starts off
right.
kind of like Last Dance, you know, in the ballady kind of slow dance way, and then about a minute in, she holds a very long note, and that kicks off the transition into this big four on the floor, you know, sweeping disco song, like always.
That's what Eric was saying from Portugal and the Man, how Feel It Still, it has its sound, start to finish. He mentioned Hello by Adele, how it starts slow and builds. So same kind of thing. Classic
sure.
pop songs kind of have that drama that builds. So another reason they're kind of chuckling that they have a hit.
Yeah. All right, and soon after Dim All the Lights, she has another number one hit. So really four number one hits in just over the span of a year. MacArthur Park, Hot Stuff, Bad Girls, and a duet with Barbara Streisand, of all people, Donna and Barbara. Not really a combo I would put together in my mind, but No More Tears, Enough is Enough. Also number one hit for her. And then we're going to flash forward one last time, a little bit into 1980. This week in 1980, Donna Summer peaking at number three on the Hot 100 with The Wanderer. So we got a number one, a number two, a number three all this week in Donna Summer's career in just a short span of time between 1977. We'll go back to I Feel Love, which was a number six hit, and 1980. So, I mean, just the fact that she could have four top 10 hits in the same week, and that has even mentioned some of her other number ones and other big songs, which just goes to show in particular how big Donna Summer was in her moment when she was just huge, just unstoppable. I mean, if nothing else, I think the four number ones in the span of a year, I mean, that's like, to this day and age, that's Bieber level.
Right. Yeah, she was sort of in some ways wound up being a little typecast to disco.
Yeah.
To the 70s. So She Works Hard for the Money, huge hit in 1983. But she didn't have another big hit, another top 10 on the Hot 100 till 1989. This time I know it's for real. 1989 is when I had just started listening to radio and in Boston. Is where I was and where she was from. Huge hit on Kiss 108, the top 40 station there, and they'd been kind of the first big national disco station in the 70s. So to have her back, to have Hometown Girl back with a huge hit, it was a big deal. So it was kind of nice to see her come back. It was a Stock Aitken Waterman song. They'd done some of the Kylie Minogue stuff, some of the Rick Astley hits. So they were kind of riding a wave with some newer artists. They lended their talents to a veteran at that point. Donna Summer gave her a top 10 hit in 1989. This time I know it's for real.
And one last note on Donna Summer as we sort of explore her tour of hits. And I guess speaking of tour and her hits, there's a Donna Summer musical that started a couple nights ago in La Jolla in California called Summer. What else? And so it's one of those jukebox musicals that it's premise seems to be through her final concert. It kind of reflects on her life growing up in Boston. She traveled. Some people may know that she moved to Germany to be in a production of Hair, and that's where she met Giorgio Moroder and really got her start. And so it chronicles all of that, and some of she became a born again Christian in the late 70s as well. And so it just traces through her life and includes almost a couple dozen of her songs interspersed at some point. So definitely cool to see the Donna Summers getting a nice tribute in this musical. I mean, we lost her almost 5 years ago. So to see that this current generation is paying a tribute in that way is also really cool. The musical stars LaShawns, who won the Tony Award back in 2006 for her role in The Color Purple. So some Broadway star power there as well. And, you know, we'll see where the musical ends up. Hopefully it can make it to Broadway or something and keep Donna Summers' legacy going.
It wasn't just one song. She had a whole bunch of songs. If it can be a whole musical like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things that I saw The Bodyguard when they kind of redid that for Whitney Houston back in 2012. And even through Jersey Boys and, you know, jukebox musicals have always, for the past couple decades, have been huge hit makers. On Your Feet, Gloria Estefan. So it's just cool to see also that, you know, it's one place that a lot of these pioneers can get their music out to different generations, different fans across the world who come in and watch the tours. And, you know, it's a great thing to see.
All right, so for someone who seemed to, oddly enough, have success mid-November for a whole bunch of years in a row, Taylor Swift has kind of been doing the same thing. This is also a Taylor Swift season. So the new album, this is posting on Thursday. It's out tomorrow.
Tomorrow, tonight at midnight.
That's right. So we're going to devote so much of the podcast next week to Reputation, the new album from Taylor Swift. Here's our homework for next week's podcast. Let's listen to the new album and each come in with a list of what we think should be the singles after. So Look What You Made Me Do, ready for its second single. Maybe Gorgeous should be the third single. We've only heard four songs so far from it. Let's each listen to the whole thing and come in and have our predictions for what should and what might, what could be the singles and hits from this album.
Okay. Okay, I like it. I like it. And, of course, to get the listeners in the mood, and your Reputation is particularly supposed to be one of her darker, you know, more moody kind of songs, and maybe a revenge tour against the media and some other figures, some celebrities who may have wronged her in the past. And no better way to get that going for the listeners than to look back on one of her most vindictive records to date. To wrap it up, here's Taylor Swift and the 2010 cut, Dear John.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.